Hello. This is Truth Be Told Transformation, and I'm your host, Bonnie Burkert. Today's guest is me. Welcome, Ginger Pullman, who we've had here at the studio with us. She is a very gifted, intuitive healer and wise woman. And she thought it would be great for everybody to sort of have some ideas on the road to Truth Be Told Transformation. How did I get here? So I thought there was so much to tell from everybody else, but I accepted Ginger's offer. So thanks for being here. This is a fascinating challenge for me.
I think this is going to be so much fun. Buckle up, kiddos, because I think it's so cool. Like, Bonnie is just so amazing and so spiritual. And I know that all of you know what an amazing interviewer she is from this show and like how she's the Bon, like she's the Yogi Bon. But Bonnie also has an amazing history herself. So I'm really excited to take your audience on a deep dive into all things Bonnaroo. So Yogi Bon, tell us about Yogi Bon. Like,
so
tell
how
us about
did
the
I
yogi.
Get here? How the did yogi you get part. Here? Well, you know, my first yoga class was in Burlington, Iowa, back in 1980.
They had yoga in Iowa.
Believe it or not, small town Iowa. Nice, and dude. My mom turned me on to it. My mom actually had taken some classes when we lived in Austria, and she had a teacher from India. And she wasn't a hippie by any means. My mom was pretty much, you know, straight and narrow, but she liked yoga. And she knew that it was good for people that have long backs like we do. And so I remember I used to sneak off and go to yoga class. My other friends were probably, you know, rehearsing with their bands after high school or something like that, and I was going to yoga.
Nobody's sneaking out to go to their yoga class, Bonnie. Okay, your parents aren't listening. You're not going to get in trouble. What were you really doing? Actually, no, that's why it's so funny, because she's being completely serious. She was sneaking out for yoga. That's the most Bonnie thing ever.
I mean, it wasn't cool.
Yeah.
Right? It was weird.
Totally weird. In Iowa, definitely weird.
Yeah, Iowa in 1980.
No offense, Iowa.
Yeah, none at all. And so when I went to college, there was, I did take some classes, and they were also, I don't even know where that would have been. It wasn't on campus. It was definitely sort of outside of the main circle that I would travel in. And I remember there was carpet on the floor, and it was really quiet, and I somehow quietly was going to yoga class. And again, all my other friends were, I don't know, working at the radio station, which was something that I was doing actually in college as well. Mm-hmm. My name, my radio name was Bonnie Beat.
Bonnie Beat at the radio
and
station.
And I had an interview show, and it was called Meet the Beat. Tony, I guess I could have called the show Meet the Beat.
Meet the Beat.
Tony Sweet in the studio, ladies and gentlemen.
Tony Tweet.
So, I mean, I was doing anything I could, even back then, to help bands. And so what I like to do, I think sort of a through line for me is, as somebody that interviews, is I don't think I'm a hard question interviewer. I think I'm a, let me make you comfortable, and then ask a whole general questions that maybe other interviewers aren't asking, and perhaps some magic will happen that way.
Mm, very nice. Yeah. And then what made you want to jump into the world of radio? Like Meet the Beat, that was your college show?
That was college radio, and I was a communications major, and so consequently I just was looking for, I don't know, just activities. And one of my best friends, Donna, we had a show together at one point, and it was really great. And then I also did a video show. It was back in the day of cable, local cable. They used to have, what was it called? Public access cable.
What in the Wayne's World were you doing?
It was something to that effect. It was called Studio 26. No, it was in kind of a library. It was in a little studio.
That's so cool.
Somewhere in town, again, off campus. And it was called Studio 26. And kids, high school kids would dance, and we were the VJs. My friend and I were the VJs.
I love this so much.
That happened. It and was the still MTV era. And so I really wanted, I was kind of like thinking about taking on Martha Quinn. Did I dare? I guess I didn't.
Yes, you did. Yes,
but in
you
my
did.
Mind, in Iowa City, in the mid-80s, I was sort of tiptoeing around, could I be the next Martha Quinn? So
I love that. Now, didn't am I mistaken? Like, didn't you at one point, like, connect with MTV, like, when you were in college? What happened there?
Oh, well, no, it wasn't really too much. I basically tried to get in, and I sent them a resume and was like, I want to be an intern over there. And it's funny, the man that I sent a resume to, fast forward years and years and years, 30 years later, still know him, still a friend. Rick Rim, you know, he actually wrote me back. I mean, so I just want to say, if you're, you know, go for your dream, because my dream was MTV, and somebody actually wrote me back before there was email and said, when you come to New York, please, you know, submit your resume again or something like that. So, you know,
I think that's amazing.
And I still have friends, you know, besides him, yeah. Some of my best friends, in fact, how I know Ginger is through MTV connections, through the fast forwarding through other lifetimes. And how I came to work with that. So
that's so amazing. And that's such a really good point about holding the vision for what you want, because you knew you wanted music and you knew you wanted New York at the time, like however it was going to shake out. Like, did you not? And like,
yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to think about it. I was really doing anything I could to kind of find a career in the music business, and you know, but I was in Iowa, so yeah. I was tiptoeing around that. And so I figured concert promotion, the TV show or the whatever, you know, cable show. And then certainly my experience with the station had that. And then when it was time to graduate, there was crossroads, because I did have an opportunity at a radio station in Cedar Rapids, but I wanted to go to New York. I had a contact. I had a contact at MTV. I had a contact with a band called 10,000 Maniacs at Elektra Records.
Oh my gosh.
Howard Thompson. So I ran to New York to figure it out. And it was all music, except there was one friend who I knew from college who was definitely bringing me into this burgeoning new age world that was happening in 86, summer of 86, in New York City. And it was, you know, again, I could go to CBGB's. At that point, Danceteria was still around. But I was also kind of drawn to these meditations, and I was actually in the building of the Dakotas.
Oh.
And there was a meditation circle happening. So I don't know if it was the same building that John Lennon lived in or not, but there was I remember it was overlooking Central Park. It was this beautiful, beautiful apartment that somebody welcomed the New Agers into, and we were doing the exercise of grounding, right? So imagining the cord, grounding through your root chakra. And I was thinking to myself, like, wow, we have to go through so many floors of this building to get to the, and then the concrete to actually, and then the subway to get down to the ground that they're telling us to connect with. So I don't know if anybody else ever has challenges with grounding visualizations, but mm-hmm. mine was still in my mind from that long ago.
Yeah, because you got a grounding cord getting run over by the 1 and the 9 train. What are you going to do?
I know. It was a little confusing, but I tried. And I kept trying and trying.
But I think that's kind of why it's always so fun to have conversations with you, Bonnie, because we will be hanging out and some amazing song will come on the radio. Like, I love this song. It's the greatest song in the history of music. And Bonnie will just casually say, worked it. Worked the album. Know the band. All the time. So tell us about you transferring over. Like, how did you sign with some major labels, and you work with some big bands. Who are some of the bands that you have worked with?
Well, it was really exciting. When I first started, I was at Arista Records, and the first record I ever worked was Kenny G. He was this new artist,
yes.
And he had this hair, and it was 7-inch singles, and I would send them out and write little notes like, this is Kenny G, and he's new, and you should play him on your radio station. And so it's my fault, everybody. No offense, Kenny.
Everybody loves Kenny G.
I mean, Kenny G's really good. And so, and then, but what was much more exciting was that I then, after a few months at Arista, I went over to Elektra. And that was my label. And I still have friends from there for years and years and years. And I was at that label at a time that there was so much excitement. It was a great label. So much was happening. And so we had all the bands coming through. I mean, Motley Crue was in the offices. The Cure, who were my all-time favorites at that juncture. So I'm happy to say that, you know, whatever. I worked with them. I was dealing with retail, so we'd have in-store appearances with these artists. And I mean, Linda Ronstadt was there. I mean, it's the list goes on. Tracy Chapman, I remember when she came into the office and it met all of us, and she was just sitting in the lobby, and I went over to say hi, and she was very, very shy.
That's nice. Did she show up in a fast car?
No, not at all. It was probably a fast limo at that point. She was being courted. I mean, it was like, I mean, that was a record that...
Was this the fast car era when that song came out?
100%.
That's so huge.
It was, we were just meeting it. We were hearing the record for the first time. And I mean, that went out so fast. And I remember asking my boss, I'm like, did we do something really right with this record? And he said, sometimes it's just in the grooves. Mm. So it was... It was an exciting time in the late 80s when CDs were coming to market. And, you know, one of the brand new bands, who was an exciting signing, was this rather strange group from Iceland called the Sugar Cubes. And starring this darling singer, Björk. So having grown up in Europe, I was always really fascinated with, you know, all the countries of Europe. And we had to study a lot about geography. And so consequently, there's Iceland. So to actually meet somebody from Iceland was incredible. And they didn't speak English at all when they first came. And I remember trying to communicate with them. And little by little, they became bigger and bigger. And people were fascinated with them. And I know one of the reasons that you kind of wanted to ask me about my, you know, one of the things you learned about my background was somehow out there in the internet world, my interview with her in 1990 for my video show. I did a video show again, local cable, low budget, forgive me. But hey, in the same way I'm talking to all my favorite spiritual seekers and teachers, I was interviewing my favorite bands. And I was very blessed to be able to talk to Björk. And I think it would have been their second record at that point.
That's amazing. And honestly, like, I know that, like, from knowing you and working with you, you have always been so supportive of musicians and artists, and they really connect with you. And I was wondering, do you think that because you are so sensitive and in tune with spirituality and energy and yoga, plus you have this amazing business sense, like, do you feel like that helps you connect with these artists when you're speaking with them?
I'd like to believe so. I mean, I think back... through the years, because I'm still working with musicians right now, kind of in a different capacity, not at the label corporate level, but really much more closer in, like, management level. And I would say I used to try to be the cool label person. And in fact, I remember Dave Grohl and Taylor Hawkins once saying to me, like, how come we've never met you before? You're the cool person from Capitol. And I was like, well, thank you, yo.
See what happened there? Did you see that?
That was
That's
a name
what
drop.
Has happened.
That was a name
we
drop right there.
We can have
right
these
there.
Conversations like, I remember when Dave Grohl said to me, like, really?
Oh, Taylor.
You always have these great stories.
I know. But, so I really did try to be understanding, empathetic. I remember backstage with The Cure, Robert Smith and Simon Gallup once saying, I was like, oh, we work for Elektra. Hello. And he's like, oh, you work for the label. Oh, what a pity. And I was like, whoa.
Where's the love?
My heart is so hurt. I'm working so hard. I'm making sure there's posters for your album in every record store in America. You know, I was like, I was crushed because there was some sort of a strange association with, I don't know. And this was back then. I think there's a little bit more cooperation now between artists and business people.
But
I hope.
Let's make no mistake. First of all, the showbiz industry, music especially, it's full of gangsters and just, it's not a nice industry. It's really not. It's very, you're not likely to meet a lot of Bonnies out there in the world. So damn you, Robert Smith from The Cure, for not recognizing the greatness that you had in your presence, going to bat for you.
Robert Smith, if you'd like to reconnect, you can find me on Instagram at
Yoga. But it is a tough industry, like the showbiz and the music industry. Like, how did you use your spirituality, or like, did you like navigate that, or were you still separating church and state at that time?
You know, during the Elektra years, I was definitely starting to go to yoga, and I started probably I found a really great teacher named Dharma Mitra, Dharma Yoga, and I would go on Sundays to kind of detox after having way too much fun all weekend. So it would be a Sunday afternoon class. Again, tiptoeing away. Everybody else would be like, let's go to dinner and have more beers. And I'm like, oh, I got this thing I got to go to. And so...
So when you're saying like you had this thing you had to go to back then, were you just like not, were you not out of the broom closet yet at that time? Yeah. So you're really secretive.
I was tiptoeing around and I, yeah, I was tiptoeing around. I mean, I would tell my bestie and she'd be like, oh, are you going to yogurt class? I mean, she wasn't like being mean about it. She wasn't disparaging. She was just teasing a little bit because, And that's you, Claudine, just so you know. I'm sending you this interview. So I would say in the early part, this was late 80s era, I do want to say one other thing I was doing, though. Yeah. This was really amazing, and I wish I knew how I came to this. But like I told you, I was meditation group. I found myself in some past life regression. This is, again, right after I got into New York. And I mean, it was crazy how things were really showing up. And I was chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. As well.
And this is like 80s, early 90s New York. This is like shoulder pads, women wearing the suits and like little sneakers. This is working girl New York.
This was,
you know,
it's just so true. And yet I still managed to be my hippie yogi self. It was still burgeoning and figuring that out. So, you know, one of the things that I went to, and I'd love to know if anybody that sees this was there as well. I went to Central Park for the Harmonic Convergence in 1987, which is a huge gathering, global gathering, to usher in the changing energies that we still talk about right now, all this 5D, the new earth, ascension. And so that was a really pinnacle event. I don't know how I got there. I was walking around Central Park at 5 a.m. looking for this group, and we were burning conch shells with copal in it and drums. And yeah, so somehow I was finding people that were interested in these things. And I used to go to a store in New York also that is still there called Enchantments, because there was a boy I loved and I needed to figure things out. And there were candles involved and my first tarot card reading. So I wasn't practicing, but I was taking it in. I did have a yoga practice that was happening, but I wasn't connecting. It was physical. I wasn't connecting the holistic sort of lifestyle that you can do it. And one of the things that I think, I'm trying to think of the timeline, but I'll just drop it in right here, and I may have said that on past shows. My teacher, Dhamma Mitra, I asked him how much yoga he practiced every day. And he said, you know, I was thinking like, oh, you teach classes, and then do you do your own practice maybe for 1 hour a day? What do you do, and what's it like? And he just laughed. He said, ha, 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 ha. I am always doing yoga. All is yoga. So that's taking it off the mat. And that's when it started going off the mat for me. And right?
I like that.
Yeah. So it's not just, you don't have to compartmentalize your spiritual practice to this one time or only when you've got your app, you're listening to your meditation app.
Yeah.
I mean, the goal is to always be in the flow.
The mat is everywhere.
Yeah.
The mat never
ends. Is all.
The mat is all.
Right. So that was a big one for me. So I would say when I transitioned from Electra to Capital, I met a colleague, and she used to have candles burning in the office all the time and burn incense. And I was like, is that okay? And so the lines started to blur a little bit more. It was okay to bring some of your mystical practices. Have a crystal on the desk. I mean, can you imagine that there was a time that it felt strange to have crystals on the desk? I mean, is that a problem for anybody anywhere?
I can go to Office Depot right now and get a quartz crystal cup holder. You know what I mean?
Oh,
or like, you know what I mean? Like,
cool. I want one of those, actually.
I'm sure they have it. Like, that's the funny thing. It's kind of like, it's so like common now. You walk into like any place, you're going to find a crystal or some incense or something like that. But back then, it was definitely like,
It was weird, and I guess I was trying to fit in because, you know, I was climbing the corporate ladder. And I, of course, didn't think of my label gigs as being corporate, but when I look back to them, they were certainly owned by huge corporations. I mean, it was corporate life. But I had the great privilege of being in the satellite office when I worked for Capital. So things could get a little bit more wild there because all the bosses were out in L.A. And I think we were a bit more free with... with that, with practices. And then I remember also a colleague, there was another kind of a bookend to the harmonic convergence meditation, you know, bringing in sort of the energies of the cosmos to our planet and being an anchor for that. And I remember sitting in somebody's office, like, okay, at 11 o'clock, come into my office. And we were doing a meditation, and there were glass doors on her office. The door was closed, but it was like glass doors, and we're sitting there. And, but we were, it's interesting how I feel like I found people that kept encouraging me to be in it, just to stay in it. So it wasn't only, I mean, I was open, but there were guides. So I think maybe people need to listen to those friends that are opening those doors for them.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay. And it's necessary. And then, hey, look where it all ultimately went.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
truth be told.
I mean, you know, energy goes where your energy flows, where attention goes. So like you're going to bring these people in, and I'm sure you've guided a lot of people along the way, like with yourself, because you are an amazing guide in all times. Like, I don't know how many times, like, oh, Bonnie, I got this weird sore throat thing, and she's like, here's the tea, here's the remedy, here's the things. And she gives me like the tea and the things to do the things. Like, I mean, she is the earth mama goddess, because you also study Ayurveda.
Thanks. I just love that. It's just so interesting. There was one time that I had, I was feeling a little lousy because I had to take some antibiotics for who knows what, like maybe dental. And so I went to the library. It used to be really easy to pop over to the library from work. And I was perusing alternative healing. And I went to this one book and I cracked it open. And right there it said, if you're taking antibiotics, just realize that it's stripping the healthy flora, so you need to replace it with probiotics such as yogurt. And I mean, I'm seriously, the book just opened right up, and there was that information for me.
A little bibliomancy.
That's the word. That's a word. Hashtag bibliomancy.
I am a big believer in it. Like, if you're ever really in a space, like, just kind of get quiet, ask your question, grab, like, whatever book is around you, and flip and look, and I don't know how many times you will get the answer you need. And
yeah,
that
it's great.
Just like that.
I mean, I would really say I'm not a person that kind of started off with any kind of formal training. I think it was I'm an enthusiast, and so it all seems to flow from there. And I think it's one of the ways that I found myself here. But before we get to the here and now, I guess I just wanted to share also. I wanted to share specifically. I liked having those candles in the office, and there was definitely some incense going on as well, but I really liked having the candles. And it's interesting because Tony Sweet just had a really great speaker on his show, and it was about Mexican folk magic. What's his name? I'm seeing him, Tony. And sorry, I'm breaking the flow here. And anyway, he was talking about how candles are used in so many different disciplines of spirituality. And so, you know, again, it took me back to a childhood growing up and how we used to go to cathedrals all the time and light a candle for my German grandmother, who was Catholic. And so I thought it was kind of cool to have those candles and create the intention around those. So I remember, you know, I used to have a candle in the office to deal with, like, this boss is mean. And then I'd have a candle at home. It's like, I hope he calls me. And so I used to multitask with my candle magic.
And then what did you tell your coworkers? So they stop in and say, like, hey, did you order those? Hey, what's that? I hope he calls me candle?
I just tell them where to go. 7th yeah. Street, Otherworldly Waxes. Hey, Catherine. I would share with them. I mean, they didn't necessarily know. Maybe I would turn the symbol around so they just saw the colored candle.
Did you have your mean boss's face on the candle? Did you cut it out?
Never. But it's interesting to kind of get around that, because I think back and about who I was back then. I think maybe just being that people pleaser and letting those people rattle me. And I've been in dealing with something more recently, and looking at that is like, why is that person... I guess I just really want to deliver for people. You know, I don't want to let people down. But we definitely went through an era back then, 80s, 90s, that it was, the management style was very different. I think we're changing now. I think there is a change where everybody is on, it's understood that everybody's contributing. And so management by terror doesn't need to happen. But I feel that I went through especially in the music business, I definitely went through a lot of kind of hysteria from the upper echelon, yeah, thinking that that was going to be motivating. And I don't know, maybe it is for some people. I don't think that it's happening anymore.
No, that era is dying out. Yeah. I mean, honestly, because right now, if you try to do that to the younger kids, they're just going to turn on their phone and they're going to live stream your little rant, boss man. So just like, tone it down.
I love that.
I mean, they'll will. I mean, everybody's got a phone and video camera. Like, you're not going to be able to get away with that much longer.
Isn't that crazy to think
about?
Which
is a good thing. It's terrible.
Yeah. No, it was too bad, and I sometimes feel like I still have PTSD from that time, and that's maybe one of the reasons that I really bailed because I left New York City and my gig at Capitol as the video promotion director. I followed my heart on that one, and I went down to Mexico and I met somebody special down there. And I remember there was a big conference call and I was like doing my send off on this call, and everybody was like, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. And then there was one little voice amongst all the goodbyes, and that person was saying, follow your dreams. I heard that.
That's so
sweet. And that's so amazing. And I saw a couple of other people. I influenced a few other people to do the same. They just said, you know what? We've done this. We've stockpiled some money. Let's go. Life's short.
You know what? I think that's really beautiful because life is short. And I think you're a really good example of trusting yourself and leaping and the net will catch you. Like, you wrote, I mean, who are you? This little college kid, but you wrote to somebody at MTV, huge. And guess what? It worked out. And then it's definitely an example of like trust and believe and following your heart, which is really scary, especially when you are like, you're successful in your career, you got the coolest job in the world, but there's something else going on.
Yeah,
trusting.
I mean, it's funny because everybody, a couple people said like, wow, you are so brave to be doing that, to quit and move down to Mexico. And I didn't see it at all. I was so clear. And this is where I really invite everybody to look at something and look at your passion. I was so crystal clear that I wanted to be down there with this love, this beloved. And so consequently, there was nothing. I mean, I did, you know, double check with friends and get some advice on it, but I didn't have fear around it. It wasn't a fear like, oh, what I was leaving behind. I think there was maybe some fear like, what would it be like down there and things like that. So, but I tell you, leap in the net will appear 100%. I moved down there. I wrote a letter to the head of the resort where I had been, my family had been going for years and years. And I just said, hi, you know, my family's a member. I want to come and live here. And he created a position for me. I mean, like an executive position at the resort. I mean, I'm just like, you're inviting me to talk about how blessed my life has been.
Well, yeah, because it's always like that. I think if you remain open-hearted and positive, you will attract amazing situations. Like,
yes,
just for fun, just so you guys know, Bonnie always gets parking spaces. Did you know this?
She always
gets parking spaces.
You can be parking like, fairies.
It could be like rush hour. It doesn't matter. Bonnie's like, just have faith. We'll get a good parking spot right in front. Sure enough, parking spot will appear right in front. Happens all the time. But I think that's a really good example of like, your energy is so open and beautiful that like things will just sort of happen for you, like really in the best way. And honestly, like, I can't imagine, because you had such a cool job, like, and plus finding an apartment in New York City, if you've ever done it, is a nightmare. So you had an apartment. Did you give up the apartment?
It was a really great apartment. You know, I did hold on to it for a little bit. I had somebody quietly subletting it, but yeah, I had a little safety net. I was organized in the disappearing act. I, you know, there was a there was my home, you know, that I could return to if I wanted to. And but no, I just tell you, just the clarity. That's my word of the year, 2022, clarity. And so just remembering that clarity and basically the blessings that went with it. So it was somebody, I went to an acupuncture session right after I moved to Cancun, and he took my pulse and he said, I feel the pulse of New York City in your veins. It was a difficult downshift. Very difficult downshift.
It was.
Yeah. I mean, you think it's just going to be like, oh, you're there and you got the ocean and guacamole and lots of basils, but it was not easy. It was not easy, but again, you find people show up. And so I just really invite people to be open to the, just be open to people who come your way, because lessons can be learned from so many. And they come, those angels probably come, maybe. Yeah, they
and
come.
Be open and, to other people.
Yeah.
Because you're very good about talking to strangers and other people. I'll do everything in the world to not talk to other people. I'm like, no.
Well, it's hard. There was some ego. Like, and I mean, I thought this was kind of something that you and I could kind of talk about, because Ginger also has done acting and modeling. And you know, I just got kind of tired of the ego. And I don't want to sound self-righteous here, but to me, it was a great, great, great privilege to work in the arts, to work around music, to work around cool bands. And I just thought there were so many people that spend a lot of time on silly politics instead of moving the ball forward on a release or, you know, tour marketing or everything we could possibly be doing. So I feel that one third of my gig at certain junctures, I was spending time kind of managing company politics rather than being creative and in marketing. So that is something that I really wanted to evolve from, but it took me a while because my identity was very much wrapped up in it. So when I went to Mexico, nobody knew who, I mean, some people knew who Radiohead was, which was, you know, an incredible.
I think they would know who Radiohead is.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. They maybe knew, but they didn't necessarily understand what it was like to be taking them for bookings over at MTV and things like that. And, you know, again, kind of a dream come true. I'd wanted to work with MTV and I didn't end up being in front of the camera, but I definitely was behind the scenes in a lot of different ways, and that was really good. And, you know, that was a dream come true. And I think it's also important, I want to share a takeaway from, is to acknowledge when you get something you want. Like, take a pause, stop the world. And don't just keep going on and on, like a next, what's next? Take a pause. Thank you. Thank you, universe. Yeah. And so I think that we can all be reminded of that, too.
That's a really good point. And I also like the fact that, I mean, it was like a dream come true. You did have like the big job. But then, I mean, you know, we got Landslide. One of my favorite lines is like, I climbed a mountain and then I turned around. And I kind of feel like that's what you did. Like, you had the big goal, the big dream. You went to New York. You worked with the biggest artists, the biggest musicians at the time. And then you're like, all right, now Mexico. I mean, that would think, some people would think like, oh, but this is my big dream. I worked so hard to get here. I could never leave this. And the answer is like, yes, you can. There can be more than one dream in your life. I think that's a really big deal.
I want to tell you something specific about that, about sort of the decision-making time in that. I'm just now remembering. Radiohead had, you know, a huge record, OK Computer. And so, again, me being in New York, I did a lot with the band. I was a very, MTV loved them. We did so much work together. So the final tour date was at Radio City Music Hall. Radiohead, Radio City. I mean, it's just so great. And it was the third, you know, last of three shows. And it was just so fun. And I mean, that's putting it lightly. It was mesmerizing. It was over the top. It was everything. It was all. And then there was an after party on top of it. And I'm hanging with Tom and Ed and Johnny. And we've been through
Ed,
this.
Johnny.
We had been through this. We've been through so much. And it was just a zenith of a night. I was just at this point. And I don't know quite how to explain it, but I'm going to try. In between going to the concert and then going to the after party, I went home and I found in my wallet two tarot cards, and they were miniature, only this big. One was the Two of Pentacles and the other was the Sun.
Oh.
And I have no idea where those cards came from. I mean, I guess somebody slipped them into my wallet. Best guess was a cab driver was giving me change, and those cards, maybe he had his own little deck and those cards floated in with some change. That would
be one. Or
could have
been Archangel Michael or a cab driver. Either one, you know, New York.
Oh my God. She cracks me up so hard. The giggles. Don't make me laugh till I cry. Okay. So, and then I just was like, I just had this epiphany. And, you know, thanks for asking all this because I'm weaving some things together. But it was, and again, I was still meant to go on to this party and kind of say goodbye to the band that I love so much. I mean, I had worked the Benz as well as OK Computer. So the 90s Radiohead, you know, the first, you know, album 2 and 3, I was in it. I was so in it. It was great. We had so many fun times. And what did that mean? I'm like, I don't know what those cards are. I didn't really know much about tarot cards at all at that juncture. But I remember kind of, I wasn't even spooked out about it. I was like, that's really, really weird. And I just had this thought, this is like a zenith. Like, does it get better than this somehow? Mm-hmm. I mean, is that defeatist? I'm not sure, but I definitely felt a big juncture, and then, you know, whatever, the rest of the day was like an all-nighter and it was awesome. And then I was gone fairly, probably within that next year. I was done.
That's why it's so wild, like, to be there at, like, I mean, so much pop culture, like, how much, I think spiritually, like, how much energy was being directed into your daily, like, circle of, like, what you were doing and what you were, like, managing at the time, like, Radiohead, especially, like, at that time, it's just massive.
It was big. Yeah, it was big, but I was still going to yoga.
Well, you're still going to
yoga? I was still going to yoga because I always found, you know, again, there's the spirit side of things, and I've never been a great meditator. I mean, I try, but I think I find meditation in different things, but, you know, physically, I know it just, you know, the breath and the back for sure. So I was still doing that. And, well, I don't know. I mean, I guess you're revealing how spirit was guiding me even back then. Because if you said, well, when did you get so, you know, when did Yogi Bhajan show up? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Yogi Bhajan definitely came about probably more so in L.A. once I did my teacher's training at Yoga West, which sadly had to close during the pandemic. It was a studio that had been around since, I think, the 70s, possibly, mm-hmm. here in L.A. So it really had some great vibes. And I will accept that nickname is given to me by a friend named Suki. And I will accept that nickname because, again, all is yoga. And it's just trying to remind that you don't have to be in your yoga outfit or have your mala beads or something like that.
Turban's optional.
Yeah, turban's optional. Because you can still be teaching even if you're not in front of a class. And I hope that, I feel like Tony Sweet has given me the opportunity here with Truth Be Told Transformation to reveal some of these teachings. And again, it's not just about the perfect down dog or, you know, whatever, cat and cow exercise, spinal flexing or anything like that. I really think it's just about awareness, consciousness. And part of that consciousness is kindness, right? And just having understanding the other person's side of things and where they may be at with things. And I wish our world could find that a little bit more. I really think that everybody feels that they have to be kind of fierce to get anything done. And I had to step aside from the business world because I didn't feel resonant to me to have to try to be that way. And I'm still doing a lot of business, but it's on different terms. And if I want to sit on my yoga mat in the middle of the day and stretch out and peace out or something like that, it's okay. So I think everybody sort of figured that out themselves during the pandemic. A lot of people also found that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was very interesting. Like, you know, there's so much talk about now, like, the 4-day work week, and people want, like, work from home options. Like, the back in the day, like, oh, I'm just killing my job from nine to nine every day. And like, I think people are just like, I think the whole world needs a nap and a sandwich.
Yeah, definitely. I am right there. Mine peanut butter and honey.
Yeah. The people need more, like, more human and, like, more flexibility. And also, we have to remember what's the tagline for Yogi Bhajan is purveyor of good vibes. And, like, you are a good lesson. Like, not that we're doing, like, toxic positivity, like, you know, like, everything is fine. Don't think bad thoughts. Like, no, you're going to have the bad thoughts. But it's like, how do you transcend them? And I think that's why it's a beautiful thing with purveyor of good vibes, because the bad vibes will show up, and, like, you can just, we're going to transmute this into something, the lesson
Thank
or whatever
you.
It needs to be.
Well, yeah, and I'll touch on that really quickly. There's some terminology, some Kundalini yoga terminology, and it is getting to neutral mind. Mm-hmm. So just keep in terms, you know, obviously, positive mind, you can figure out what that is, right? And that gives us a lot of energy. But negative mind, I think that we ascribe to people being in a bad mood or something like that, you know, being having a negative attitude. But negative mind can also be something that informs you for safety purposes. For example, don't touch that hot stove. Now, that is your negative mind connecting with your sense organs to take your hand away. So neutral mind is really probably is more the optimal where we want to be. It's neither it's neither good nor bad in as we're reacting to things. And I don't know that it's going to be that easy for all to take that on, but there you go. There's a concept to chew on and see if that's something that, I don't know, brings peace. I think that is a that is my wish at this point in my life.
Peace. And you know what? That's a conscious practice. Like, it's not like, I'm just going to be all just yogi in my neutral mind. Like, no, you still, like, are doing the work to get to that place. It's not like, I mean, if anybody has the idea of, like, one day you're going to do enough down dogs and everything is just fine. No. You're not going to do, like, one mushroom trip and everything's fine. No. Like, you got to do all the things.
Yeah.
All of it.
I know. And yet, at the same time, I think you can keep it simple. And it goes back. So if you don't want to go to a yoga class or feel like you have to do any of these practices, actual practices or actual tools, if you want, I still think that maybe just bring it back to breath. You know, somebody cuts you off in traffic. I reference traffic a lot. I mean, is that so LA of me? Like, that's one of my big problems is traffic. Deep breath. Deep breath. Don't let them get, it's not personal. They didn't cut you off on purpose because they have a beef with you. Who knows? Maybe they just need to get home for an emergency or something like that. So
maybe they're just a clown from Clownville.
Yes. Well, there's a lot of that that goes on too.
A high level of amusement helps me with traffic. And it's kind of like, oh, okay, you're going to go do that now? That's how you're going to live your life? That's your plan? You're going to cut me off? You're not going to use your blinker? You're not going to use a turn lane, even though there's a perfectly good turn lane. You're going to slow down in my lane and then you use the turn lane. That's your plan. Oh, anyway, so just a high level of amusement can get you out of, at least back to neutral mind. Like, and if you're going like down here, get yourself amused up to back to neutral mind territory.
So, okay. So what about you as far as your thoughts about spirit calling louder than showbiz for yourself?
Well, for myself, I think a part of it, and I was actually thinking about you and your story, like, regarding showbiz, like, it is a really tough industry. And I think at a certain point, just because my spiritual journey became just so, I personally got very hermit-like for a very long time. Like, I didn't want to go out to auditions, and I suddenly became very uncomfortable with my picture being taken, like, in that haunted. That happened pretty quickly. I like pivoted. Like, it's like I kind of compare it to that story of, I don't know if this is a real story, if I'm just making this up, like Adam and Eve, and they're in the garden, they're naked, and all of a sudden they realize, oh crap, we're naked, like after like whatever happens. I don't know the Bible very well. I should, but I don't. But anyway, that whole story, it was almost like that. Like all of a sudden with my spiritual practice and like and doing what I was doing, like suddenly connecting with people and strangers was just not what I wanted to do. Like I needed a little bit of time to heal, like to get my energy back. And it just became like I didn't want to have that energy exchange, because you are, when you're acting, especially, like you're definitely using your own spirit, your energy. Yes. And you're expelling that, and like I just kind of like I wanted to harness it like to so much.
That's amazing. Maybe, that you figured that out quite early. I mean,
yeah. I mean, if I would have been really cool, I would have figured out how to harness my energy and then do the acting work and then go back. But I didn't. I just became very. I don't know. All of a sudden, it just very quickly became like no. But just yeah.
So it does it suck your soul? One of my favorite friend and people I work with, she would always, Rinda, she would always ask the question, is it soul sucking? And for me, I was incredibly uplifted by my work for so long. And then I recognized when I had topped out. And I mean, it got to the point that I was on overload. There was just too much. There was almost too much coming in. And I felt kind of good about stepping aside. And it's like, let's the new guard in and let them step in, because I'm supposed to go and learn something else. And I did end up returning to the major labels after Mexico. I ended up getting back in. I was with Sony and I was with Rhino during some really exciting times with iTunes and YouTube all, you know, sort of coming to market at that point. And but when it was time to go, that same epiphany after the Radiohead concert, it was just so clear, it's time to do something else. So listen, everybody, those messages are there for us. And I really appreciate you sort of reminding me about that.
And I think that also when we talk about, like, you know, that book, that bibliomancy, I think it's called bibliomancy. I could be saying the wrong thing the whole time. But anyway, that thing, like getting the message when you need it, I have a feeling that there are probably somebody listening to this message who is thinking about a major change. And this is your message right now from the tarot card reader. Do it.
Yeah.
Whoever's listening right now, you have to quit your job. It's time for you to move to Mexico. And or maybe it's time
or
for you to
you want.
Or quit your corporate job and start a band. Start a band right now. There's your message for anybody that's listening.
I've always, always wanted to do this. I had a show briefly in, I told you about various shows, and I did a couple of shows in New York separate from the one that I was interviewing. And I had always kind of wanted to return to this, and I was thinking radio, and I always thought about podcasts, and basically this all happened just because I was helping out at Disclosure Fest, and Tony saw me and we had known each other. And so he brought me over, and I feel like it's later in life. And here I am, putting on mascara. I put on mascara every day, but putting on red lipstick for the Truth Be Told viewers. And for anybody else that listens, I don't know. I'm there in front of the mic trying to raise the vibe one interview at a time.
Oh.
So thank you for interviewing me and letting me tell my story, because it was very revealing. And I think that maybe it's funny. I never would read my journals. I always journaled a lot. I'm a big believer in writing. There's an expression, I will write myself well. And do so, by the way, with a pencil or a pen. Don't type. And I would never.
Magic tips.
Yeah, it's good. It's like energetically, and just get your hands off digital when you can. But I remember I never would read back, and then I finally did. And it was so revealing. I was like, oh my gosh, I never realized that I had written that. So I think that there's there's messages out there that we don't realize that exist for us. And so I don't know. Go back through all that you've been studying and see what resonates, and maybe there's a message for you.
Yeah. Tune in. Purvey good vibes. And the good vibes will answer.
So Ginger has her tarot cards here.
Oh,
Why don't you do a special reading for everybody?
All right.
About following your heart.
All right. So this message for anybody who has been listening to this, and you're thinking about doing a major big change. I'll shuffle away from the mic. And you're thinking about doing a major change in your life, or moving, or you just want to know what to do next. We're just going to pull a card. We'll see what happens. Bonnie, I'll let you pick the card for the people. It's not some like crazy card. Oh.
Oh, I got two. What?
I knew that would happen. God. I knew that would happen. I'm psychic and I called it. I knew this card would come up.
Oh, my God.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Two of Pentacles right here. And this is the exact card that Bonnie had in her wallet after the big Radiohead show. The one that Archangel Michael, or the cab driver, put in the car.
What?
Your wallet, not the car. But
what?
So this message for anybody who is listening, do what Bonnie did. Follow your heart, because we also have the Ten of Cups, which is my happily ever after card.
Oh,
so
yay.
Really, like, somebody's kind of like, if you're
rainbow.
Kind of
rainbow,
if you are in the muck and you're just really not happy, like, with where you are, I think it's definitely it's a shift. And some people might say that you are out of your mind, but you have to follow your instinct and follow your heart. And look at Bonnie, like, Bonnie left the music industry, had an amazing adventure in Mexico, and then she came right back into the music industry.
Yeah,
like,
I am.
Maybe you can just.
I thought I was
going
to leave.
Bit.
I kept trying to leave a lot.
Well,
I did.
You needed that time.
And
though.
Yet, yeah, I know. Then you have to see. But that's what it's. But it's on. It's in a different way. It's in a kinder, gentler way.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So, well, everybody, if you want to look more closely, it's the Two of Pentacles and the Ten of Cups. If you want to take a closer look and do your homework on what those mean for you, because they're for all of you, as is all what we do here at Truth Be Told. And Ginger, thank you so much. This was really fun, and we'll do it again.
Thank you.
For sure. And until the next time, I'm Bonnie Burkard, and I've been the guest, the special guest today, and wow, thank you. I feel special. And as does my Truth Be Told brothers. We got Robert Hensley every Monday at 3:00. He goes live with the Minuteman Report. And of course, Tony Sweet on Fridays, also live at 3 p.m. Pacific with Truth Be Told. Thanks, everybody. Until the next time, wishing you lots of love, lots of light, and peace out.